And welcome back to Coast as we continue with the supernatural. In a moment, our very special guest, Professor Slim King, joins us. I want to talk about Harry Houdini for a moment. Harry Houdini was a Hungarian-born American illusionist and stunt performer noted for his sensational escape acts. He first attracted notice in vaudeville in the U.S., and that is Harry Handcuff Houdini on a tour of Europe, where he challenged police forces to keep him locked up. Soon he extended his repertoire to include chains, ropes, slung from skyscrapers, straitjackets underwater, and having to escape from and hold his breath inside a sealed milk can with water in it. In 1904, thousands watched as he tried to escape from special handcuffs commissioned by London's Daily Mirror, keeping him in suspense for an hour. And another stunt saw him buried alive, only just able to claw himself to the surface, emerging in a state of near breakdown. Now, while many suspected that these escapes were faked, Houdini presented himself as a scourge of fake spiritualists. He was obsessed with trying to communicate with his dead mother and went through all kinds of mediums and people to find her. He was not successful. He told his wife, Bess, that when he died, they will try to communicate. He will try to come back. Harry Houdini died on October 31st, Halloween, 1926, in Detroit, Michigan. On October 31st, 1936, 10 years later, at the Knickerbocker Hotel in Hollywood, California, they conducted a seance to try to find and reach Harry Houdini.
It is the spirit of Houdini we wish to contact. Houdini, are you here? Are you here, Houdini? Please manifest yourself in any way possible. Take from this earnest gathering any strength that may be necessary for you to use. Take any vital thing from us that you may need to enable you to carry out your promise of years ago. We have waited, Houdini, oh so long. Never have you been able to present the evidence you promised. And now, this is a night of night. The world is listening. Harry, your world, your audience. And Bessie is here. Your Bessie, who is part of you for 33 years. She's here, Harry, pleading in her heart for a prearranged sign from you. It means so much to her, to all of us, to the world. Harry, we are all seekers after truth. Please manifest yourself by speaking through the trumpet. Lift it. Lift it. Speak for the Lord. Speak. Speak, Harry. We are watching and waiting, Harry. Levitate the table. Move it. Lift the table. Move it. Rap on it. Spell out a code, Harry. Please. Ring the bell. Let his tinkle be heard around the world. Do it, Harry. Please. Please, we are waiting. Bessie is waiting.
And they kept waiting. He never showed. He never showed. In a moment, Professor Slim King joins us. We'll talk about Harry Houdini and magic next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Professor Slim King. I'll tell you a little bit about the professor, a paranormal researcher for the majority of his life. Professor Slim King has designed mental illusions for dozens of professional magicians, including David Copperfield. He is a proud recipient of both the Merlin and Houdini Awards in radio magic and claims to be the world's foremost authority on Houdini's life after death. He has written about the tarot, pendulums, numerology, palmistry, as well as dreams and omens as well. Welcome to Coast, Professor Slim King. Professor, I can't think of a better time to have you on the show. Welcome.
It's great to be here, George. This is going to be a great evening. We are celebrating Halloween like crazy here in Orlando.
It was super.
We have Halloween Horror Nights. Goes on for like 7 weeks here.
Wow, 7 weeks?
7 weeks. We party and celebrate all the spooky fun that you can have. I'm here at the Hard Rock Hotel. It's kind of the central location for all the fun stuff.
Do people hate clowns as much as I do, Professor?
They do. Oh, my gosh. They have spooky clowns at dozens of them here that just drive people crazy. My wife cannot stand clowns because I took her here 1 year.
I don't like them. I don't like them either. Hey, I received a magic kit from you that we'll talk about a little bit later in the program, and you can take us through it.
Sure.
And we'll try to paint pictures for our audience on this. But that Houdini clip that I, the seance that I played right before you came on, they were unsuccessful in reaching him. But, boy, he really wanted to come back and communicate with his wife and find his dead mother, didn't he?
Yes, Houdini did want to escape from the silence of death, and he did. On January 8, 1929, Houdini's spirit came back and contacted his wife.
How did that happen?
Well, for years and years, he'd been dead a couple of years, and his wife had a $10,000 prize to anybody that could contact him and bring back the secret code that they had between each other. And I had stumbled on this thing. I'd read something by Thomas Rossetto, and he was on your show just a few weeks ago.
Yep, sure was.
And he laid the great groundwork for me getting started and really doing some drilling down deep into everything that was going on. And it was really amazing what happened. There were hundreds and hundreds of course, fake psychics that were trying to cash in. But there was one particular man, Arthur Ford, who didn't even sign up for the money. But he's the one who came through with the message.
And tell us a little bit about Arthur Ford.
Now, Arthur Ford was a pastor of the Spiritualist Church in New York. He was one of the head guys there. And he had actually, after Houdini died, he challenged Thurston, because Thurston was the number one magician after Houdini died. If it wasn't for Houdini, we'd all be talking about Thurston. He was the number one guy. And he did what Houdini did. He started to go after the mediums and the fake psychics. And so Arthur Ford challenged him to a debate. And they had a debate, and he just totally trounced him. The debate was at Carnegie Hall, to let you know how successful Arthur Ford had become, that he started renting out Carnegie Hall for his church.
Now, when Houdini died, I want to jump ahead just for a little bit.
Sure.
He died in Detroit, my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember the Tony Curtis movie, he played the Harry Houdini character.
Yes.
Wasn't he always taking punches to his stomach? He had this rock-hard stomach, and he would always challenge people, and somebody sucker-punched him or something, and he busted his appendix? Is that
Correct.
What happened?
Yep. Houdini was really a strong guy. He really, really worked out all the time, swam a lot, and he would like to get the some of the townsfolks really upset at him, and they would get upset at him, and then he would let, like, the chief of police punch him in the stomach. Boy, I bet you'd like to take a punch at me, wouldn't you? And so they would punch him in the stomach. So it was kind of a thing that he had going. And one day, he wasn't feeling too good, and a spiritualist had come with some other guys. He was an artist, and he punches Houdini in the stomach a couple times while Houdini's laying down. Houdini was always standing up. So John Cox from Wild About Harry, there's a website, and he has some great information. A bunch of doctors came in, and they decided that Houdini, died from this punch. A lot of doctors nowadays say he just died of peritonitis from appendix.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the battle has raged on and on, and what really killed him, and it goes back and forth. But I think he had the onset of appendicitis, and that when he was hit, it actually broke.
It busted. That's right.
Yes.
And all that bacteria comes out, and it just ran through his body.
Right. And they had no antibacterial anything back then in 26. So he took him 7 days to die.
Did he have a sepsis? Is that what happened?
Yes. Yeah. It was peritonitis, so it's sepsis all through. They had two operations, and then they gave him some mysterious serum that they'd been working on, but nothing seemed to work. During those 7 days, he had time to go over this afterlife experiment that he and Bess had worked out, and they'd had it since the early 1900s, since before 1913. They had this, it's a two-way code that they'd worked out. If one of them died, that they would use this code mm-hmm. to contact each other. And so he had a week. It took him a week to pass away. He was so strong. And so they had a week together to fine-tune this code. And then about 2 years later, she gets the actual code from Arthur Ford.
Now, how does Arthur Ford get the code? What is he in a medium trance? What happens?
Yes, Arthur Ford was a trance medium. He wasn't like Marjorie, the witch from
right.
Boston.
Or Whoopi, like or she's her. Like, was he like Whoopi Goldberg in Ghost?
He just goes into it. He puts on a blindfold and goes to sleep.
Okay.
Like Casey.
All right. He goes into that trance state.
Right. He just goes into a trance state. They have to write down everything that happens, and then he reads it later. He doesn't really always remember it, what goes on. It's in his subconscious, but he consciously doesn't really remember all the time what happened. So they transcribe these seances. So he started having these seances, and in one of them, he contacted Houdini's mother about a year before this. And then he starts having these seances, and he starts getting the code. Now, the Houdini message is actually in three parts. It's one word, then nine words that spell another word, and then she, it's a two-way code. Bess has five words in French that she says back to him.
Uh-huh.
Now, does that make sense to you? Everybody I talk to, 99% of them only think of a one-way code. You're on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You have one word or something, you're going to get it across. And then they're going to know that you're there. But Houdini was sharper than that. Houdini said, listen, I'm over on the other side. I want to make sure she gets the code.
That she's the one who gets it.
Right. I want to make it sure it's her. So she has five words in French that she gives back that come back to him. So this was an ingenious code, really, because it's 10, it's like 15 words long.
Why was Harry Professor obsessed with either trying to come back spiritually or to even let everybody know what was going on?
Well, as you know, Harry had to be first.
And had to escape.
Right. He was a scopologist. He had to be first. I don't know if you know that Harry was the first guy to fly an airplane in Australia.
Yes, he was. That's true. Yeah. I heard about that.
So he had to be first. As a matter of fact, he did a great movie called The Grimm Game about that. So, and he did several movies. He was a really multi-talented guy. I think he would have had a movie
career.
You know, mogul, yeah, had he survived. He invented what they call now the dailies. In the movie industry. He invented that.
Those rush cuts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So he was, awesome in all these different ways. So he was going to be number one, and if he had to come back from the grave to do it, he was going to do it.
He was going to do it. And you think it was successful?
I know it was successful. I know that the code and the message that he gave was exactly the same message that they had agreed upon. I know that for a fact.
Did it comfort Professor Bess, his wife?
Bess was in tough shape. Bess was pretty depressed that, her husband had died. And Bess was, she had developed some, what I would consider bad habits. She spent money like crazy. And she...
While he was alive and after he died, right?
While he was alive and after he died. And so if you remember 1929, when the message came back, all hell broke loose. None of her magic friends really wanted to believe it in any way. And then later in the year, the stock market crashes and she loses not only all her friends, she loses all her money.
Oh, she was vested in the stock market, huh?
Yes. Ugh. So she loses the majority of her friends, the majority of her money, and now she's got this bad habit of spending money like it grows on trees. She just...
And I guess Harry left her a nice little sum, huh?
Yeah, he left her part of the... they paid double indemnity or whatever for his...
insurance?
Insurance. The insurance was $25,000.
Which in 1936, it's probably a lot of money then.
Right. It's probably, that's close to $1 million. So they doubled that because they said it was an accident because this guy punched him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the insurance company that came up and said, that can't happen. You can't get appendicitis from being punched. And so they were proven wrong in court, so she got $50,000. So she was rolling in dough.
Now,
and then they put it all in the market, and she lost it all.
Now, you have heard of the curse that killed Houdini.
Yes.
What is the curse?
Now, Houdini had a three-part show. The first part of his show was magic.
Mm-hmm.
The second part was escapology, the escape. He would do an escape. That was where the Chinese water torture cell or the milk can escape. And then the last part, towards the end of his career, he would go after the spiritualists, and he would have this confrontation with them.
On stage.
Nothing self-like confrontation, right? Well, at some point in time, he would say, I've had enough. And he would get up during that third part. He would go out to a palm reader or somebody that he considered fake, and he would go in there, and all the reporters and everybody would be following him, and he'd go in and he'd find a couch or something, and he'd pull out like an incandescent gown that glows in the dark or something. See, I found it.
Yep.
I got you. You know,
and it's probably attached to a string or something like that.
Right. So, and of course, the mediums would just, what are you doing? I have nothing to do with that. Well, they honestly didn't, because I'm a magician, and a magician always has what you call an out. There's mm-hmm. always a way out. You work it into your magic trick. If you have a magic trick, you might have two or three different methods on how it works. And
right.
if something fails, you switch to the next one, and you switch to the next one,
mm-hmm.
and it works. So you're assured of success. And so in his magic, that's built in. In his escapes, of course, I guarantee he had two or three keys in there, you know, and if all that failed and he couldn't get the key, Bess would come out and kiss him, and she'd have the appropriate key in her mouth.
And just spit it into his mouth.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So he always had an out. He always had a way out. Well, it was exactly the same thing for the spiritualist, because he had an agent. And she would go into the town, and she would find some low-hanging fruit. She would find some mediums that were obviously tricking people. But some she couldn't find what they were doing, right? She couldn't catch them. So she would pull out something from beneath her clothes and, like, stuff it into the couch. And so later, Houdini had a sure thing that he could come back and expose them, even though they didn't know anything about it.
It seems, though, that somebody somewhere put the curse on him.
Right. So he did this with Marjorie. Marjorie was the witch from Boston.
Hold on for a second, Professor. We're at a break, but we'll come right back and talk about the curse that killed Houdini. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Professor Slim King with us as we talk about the life of Harry Houdini. We'll also talk about magic very shortly as well. Professor, back to the curse. You were talking about the Marjorie and Houdini. And explain a little bit more about who Marjorie was.
Okay, Marjorie's real name is Mina Crandon. And she was a socialite in Boston. She was married to a doctor. And they had kind of a mysterious life. She... was said to be really, really a sensuous lady. All the pictures I see, she looks pretty average, but everybody who met her thought she was just devastatingly beautiful. I don't know why, but they did. And it had probably had something to do with the way that she did her seances.
Mm-hmm.
Mina was they called her Marjorie, and she was the Witch of Lime Street. Sometimes they called her the Blonde Witch of Boston.
And was it a compliment in those days to call somebody a witch?
I think so. I think if you were a medium, I think they got a big kick out of it. Because it was a lot of people during that time period, during the spiritualist movement, a lot of people were having family circles. There were all kinds of people that were Catholics or Baptists or whatever on their Sunday afternoon or a Saturday. They would all get together in the middle of the day and hold hands, and somebody would go into a trance, and they would try to contact their deceased relatives. It was common back in the 20s.
Okay, but this curse now.
Right. So Harry goes, and he's going to check out Mina Crandon. He's going to go to Boston, and they line up about 6 seances that he's going to attend. Now, the Scientific American has a $2,500 purse for anybody that can prove that they are a real medium or anything paranormal. And kind of like the JREF, the James Randi Educational Foundation, had $1 million one here.
Which they never had to give out.
Right. They never had to give it out, but I don't think they actually let anybody who could actually win participate.
They won't like you for that one.
Yeah. They can dislike me all they want. I don't think they played fair, and they finally shut it down, and they're just giving the money to whoever they want. That is interesting that they were taking in about $1.5 million a year, talking about $1 million contest. So they were coming out way ahead. So anyway, the Scientific American has the same kind of thing going on. So they are always going to Marjorie's seances. So they set this up with 6 of these, and Houdini goes up. But he doesn't send Rose Mackenberg. That's the agent that he usually sends ahead. What he does is he builds a box. It kind of looks like a sauna. He builds his box, and he has James Collins build it for him. And he builds all of Houdini's props. And it's designed so that only Mina's head and her hands can stick out.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Okay.
So she can't get at anything. So Houdini's going to make sure that she can't produce any trickery. So they do one seance, and everything goes according to plan. And they have what they call a bell box. It's a little bell inside of a box, and if they push on the lid, the bell will ring. And they always put the box outside of the reach of Mina. And in this particular instance, they put it between Houdini's legs. So there's no way anyone could get at it. Well, in the first seance, the bell rings. So the second seance, he brings in the box, and he puts her in the box. He's going to stop it,
mm-hmm.
right? And they put that, and the second seance, the bell rings.
So now he's baffled.
So now he's got a fixer. And remember what we talked about before, about there's always an out. He has to fix Marjorie because he's actually already written a book about her, how he's, exposed her.
Yeah.
So he's got this book he's going to put out, so he has to expose her. So she comes in, everybody gets around the seance, and, of course, Marjorie has a spirit guide, and his name is Walter, and it's Marjorie's brother. So Walter, she goes into a trance, and Walter comes out and just starts cussing and swearing and cursing at Houdini. And he says, "Why did you put this foul thing in here? Why are you doing this? Why did you do this? I'm cursing you."
And this is a spirit saying this, right?
This is the spirit saying it through Marjorie. And the spirit Walter puts a death curse because inside the box is a ruler, one of those rulers that folds up into 3 pieces.
Yeah.
One of those old kinds.
Yeah.
And it's inside the box. The only people that had access to the box was Houdini.
Wow.
And James Collins.
How soon was the curse, Professor, and then Houdini ended up dying?
Well, he cursed him, and some people say that he said, "You'll die in a year." People debate about that. But he died in 2 years. He was totally dead. This big, strong man died in 2 years after being cursed by Walter.
Wow. Did it scare him?
Well, actually, Houdini used it in his advertising. You can see there are Houdini ads all over the place where Houdini advertises that he's under the curse of the spiritualist.
Could die at any moment.
Yeah, and it really helped him, you know, kind of, in a way. But then you get this concept of the self-fulfilling prophecy, right? That they have prophesied that he's going to die. So later, when Houdini gets sick, maybe this is in the back of his mind. And so he doesn't go to the doctor because he doesn't want to prove them right. He doesn't want to show that he's getting sick or that something's happened. And that's kind of my viewpoint of maybe what happened, why he didn't go when he first started getting sick.
And Arthur Ford, what happened to him eventually?
Arthur Ford toured the world after he gave this.
Did he outlive Houdini?
He outlived, he lived until 71.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Arthur Ford lived a fantastic life. So after Houdini tries to frame up Marjorie, he puts out this book. He actually fails, but he says he does it. And he's got these photos of Marjorie's legs under the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had some drawings made where her leg is reaching around his leg. So he makes some drawings and puts them in the book where the photo is not anything like the drawing.
Ah, a little trickery by Houdini?
Yes, so Houdini once again is doing this. And there was a guy named Walter B. Gibson, and he is probably one of, if not the number one, expert on Houdini. He worked with Houdini, he worked with Dunninger, and then he worked with Kreskin. And he makes this statement. There's a bombshell in the interviewed Kreskin, and he gives this quote by Gibson. It says, "When will magicians realize that Houdini was often as dishonest as the mediums he purported to expose?"
Wow. That's pretty heavy.
That is heavy coming from the number one guy. So he knew that they were putting James Collins in there and that Rose Mackenberg was going ahead, and they were setting them up. So he would have a great show, the three-part show.
Can you imagine what Houdini would have done, Professor, if they had television in those days?
Boy.
He would have been huge. He would have been huge.
Kind of brings up another subject, you know, on seances, and you wonder why people don't put a seance on TV, really. Well, I was involved in a...
Well, they have to darken it so much you won't see anything.
Right. Well, we'll talk about that a little later, because these seances, the ones I'm talking about, happen in broad daylight.
Oh, really?
Arthur Ford's seance was about at noon.
Huh.
It was broad daylight when he had the Houdini seance.
Well, that's because he probably was the real deal.
He was what they call the white crow. If all crows are black, all you have to do is find one white one to prove that all crows aren't black.
Yeah.
And they refer to them as the white crow.
Interesting take. Let's talk a little bit about magic, and then next hour we'll take phone calls with you. You sent me a box. I'm going to shake it for people. It's full of a lot of stuff. What is this?
It's what I call a hoodoo box, and it's really magic that you do over the radio. That's how I got my Merlin Award.
I'll explain what's in here, and you tell me why they're there, okay?
Okay.
First of all, you put a calculator in there. How come?
Yes. Well, sometimes when you do a numerology things, a calculator is almost essential in this day and age because kids really don't, this Common Core math doesn't really get to them as good as old style mathematics. So I always put a calculator in the box so they can know what's, you know, to be assured to check any mathematical calculations for anything that's numerological.
You have a little notebook, a very small notebook.
And that's for taking notes, anything you want to write down.
Two pencils?
Yeah, some pencils to do...
do what we need to do?
Yeah, anything All right. you need to do that way.
A little... Well, you've got a penny, a nickel, a couple pennies. You've got 8 cents in here.
Should be 4 pennies and a nickel.
I got 3 pennies and a nickel. Oh, 4. Nope, here it is.
There you go.
Thanks. I made 9 cents on the deal.
That's for something that we could do with everybody.
Okay.
Listeners and stuff, a little magic that we could do over the phone and over the radio with 2.7 million listeners.
All right, you can pair a dice here.
Yep, pair of dice.
Okay.
Always good for determining the future.
3 bottle caps.
If you look on the inside of the bottle caps, you'll find rock, paper, and scissors.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you... I'm from the Pacific Northwest originally, and we had Lucky Beer up there. They had little jokes on the inside of the bottle cap.
No.
This is a company up there, Sessions Beer, I guess, and they have... rock, paper, scissors. So sometimes I play rock, paper, scissors with those over the phone.
Interesting. Well, now there's a little red piece of plastic that's about 3.5 inches long. What is this?
That is what I call natural magic. Something that does something magical, but it just looks like a piece of plastic.
Okay.
It's right there.
There's a little pendulum you gave me. It looks like it's got a little cube at the end, shaped like a triangle.
Yeah. Now, pendulums are great because
I love those.
Pendulum, in the way I see it, the spiritual world comes into this world through your subconscious.
Yes.
It comes into this world through your dreams. It comes into this world through things that you're not conscious of, but you can become conscious of. And a good example I like to use is say a lady's pregnant. She's pregnant, and she has no idea what the sex of that child is.
Right.
Back in the day, they would take a woman's long hair, tie it on her wedding ring, and they would use it as a pendulum over her stomach to determine the sex of that child. She would hold it. And if the pendulum goes away from her and back, away from her and back, like she was nodding, that would be yes. And if it goes to the left and to the right, to the left and right, like
that's
you're shaking
no.
your head, that would be a no.
Yep.
And so they would ask her the sex of the child, and she would do that to get a yes or no. Because her entire body knows the sex of that child, right? Subconsciously, she's building another little human being in there.
See, I would do this with a piece of paper, Professor, with mm-hmm. what you just said, yes, yes, no, mm-hmm. no, and I'd make it out on a drawing, and you could use it like that. It's easier to look at, and it's remarkable how it works.
Yes, and in my opinion, you're tapping into your subconscious. It's awesome for finding lost objects.
Okay, and then
your mind knows where that object is.
And you've got some tarot cards in here.
Yeah, and there's just some tarot cards, a deck of tarot cards for you.
All right, okay. Well, when we come back at the top of the hour, we will go through some of these, and we'll see what happens. And if the audience is going to participate in anything, do you want them to get some pennies or something?
Yeah, I wanted to have the audience get some pennies and a nickel, 4 pennies and a nickel.
Okay, if you can do that, folks, if you have that around your house, a nickel and 4 pennies, go ahead and grab them, and in a few minutes, when we come back, we will be going through that. We're also going to take some phone calls with the professor about Houdini and magic next hour. Tell me about working with David Copperfield, Professor.
Oh, that's amazing.
I think he's a genius.
He is. I really, really like David Copperfield. He's, a kindred spirit or something. I just love working with him. And he's one heck of a guy because I have more respect for him than almost anybody I know. And I know he takes some flack here and there, but I think he has ideologically, he has some real strong moral values that I just really appreciate.
Would you call Chris Angel a magician as well?
Well, I have had a long term relationship with Chris Angel, and he's a magician, but he's not in the same league as Copperfield, in my opinion. But one very intriguing thing is when we get back and talk to about a little more about the seance, the code word was believe. And the actual show that Chris Angel does in Vegas is called Believe.
Believe. That's true. That's
yes.
True.
So that's taken straight from the Houdini code. I don't know if people know that, but that's exactly where that comes
from. That's cool. Now, is Copperfield still at the MGM in Vegas?
Yes. He's been there like 16 years, I think.
Sells out all the time, doesn't he?
Pardon me?
He sells out all the time.
Oh. Yeah, you have to struggle to get
tickets to get in.
From time to time, I will fly out and I get to see a show, and sometimes I'll have to be like with the sound guy.
All right, stay with us, Professor. We'll come back, talk more about this. We'll take phone calls, and we'll also go through this magic kit that you sent me. And folks, again, get a nickel and four pennies because he's going to do some magic later.